This is an interview with Mr. Roy Nagai, and the interviewer is Arthur Hansen. The interview is being held at Mr. Nagai's home in Denver, Colorado. The interview is being done for the Japanese American Project of the Oral History Program at California State University at Fullerton. The time of the interview is approximately 2:45 in the afternoon of November 9th, 2001. Okay, Mr. Nagai, how are you today?
Pretty good.
The first question I would like you to just run with freely is to tell me what you can about your personal and family background.
Well, I had, father and mother, and I had three brothers. And one brother passed away in 1952. Okay, and I had no sister. And we were born in Sebastopol, California. And then we went into camp, Amachi. Well, no, we went to Merced first. Merced, we stayed there, I think, I don't know how long. And then we eventually came to Amachi. Okay, and Amachi, we were there for until I graduated high school there in Amachi. And then after Amachi, I came to Denver and worked on a farm.
Okay, let's back up a little bit.
Okay.
We're probably going a little
too
fast.
Too fast, so okay. Back to the country.
We were talking before we turned on the tape, and I know you don't want to repeat yourself, but I want to get some. Okay. Tell me a little bit about the Santa Rosa and Sebastopol area in relationship to Japanese people that were living there.
Well, most of the Japanese people that I knew of were, either they worked in a hop farm or apple. That's what my folks did, okay?
Were there a lot of Japanese people in that area?
Quite a few. Mm-hmm. Quite a few. And then I didn't graduate. Excuse me. I was in, when Pearl Harbor came, I was a sophomore in high school, and I grew up most of it in Sebastopol, and I remember working for $1 a day doing apple work, and that was on peeling apple machine. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, tell me about it.
Well, it was what they do with the apple was they had a machine, hand machine now. You would stick the in a prong, and then you turn it 2 times, uh-huh. And they would peel it and take the core out.
Oh, they core it too, huh?
Yeah, core it out. And then, all the women, it goes into a tray, and then, all the women, like my mother, they would slice it in half, because it comes out in a spiral, right? It comes in, they cut it, and they put it on the, Anyway, that's what I used to do for a dollar a day.
Was that in a packing plant?
No, in those days, they were family. We worked for a Japanese family. Uh-huh. And we would just, they would do this, we cut, they take the core out, and then they put it on a tray, and then they put it in a sofa kennel, and then they dry it.
Oh, I see.
They dry it, and then they send it to a
processing plant. How many families were working for this one operation?
This one was Oriental.
And were you living there near that, their land?
Yeah, on the land, I remember. And then we would do that. But, you know, the ironic part is, every year it's a different place.
Oh, you mean you weren't working at the same?
Oh, no, no.
Oh, really? Even on apples, you would move to a different place? Different.
Every time I come, I says, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what school I'm going to go.
How come?
Well, I don't remember, but I remember every time, you know, they would, my father was very good, you know, they had this hand machinery that peels the apple. Uh-huh. My father was very good in fixing those. And they know that, so they, I guess they go out for a bid, you know. So
Or you get more money.
Yeah, so we would work at this one factory, I mean place. Then next year I'm going to another place, I remember.
All in the same area around
Same
Santa
area,
Rosa?
Suburb of Sebastopol.
Okay, so different schools, though, you would go to.
I usually go, I don't know how many schools I went.
Oh, really? And your siblings and everything, you all went to different grade schools?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
And when did that stop? When, by the time you got in high school or before?
It didn't stop until I went to camp.
Really? So, and then you said half the time you were working on apples and half the time you were working on hops.
Hops. Mm-hmm.
Now, would you do the same thing, work with a family on hops, or would you go into a plant?
Yeah, no, I like hops. We would usually, you know, my family, and then the people would, we would get to get negotiate, and there's about four or five other people. And then, you know, we all live in the same place, and my mother would do most of the cooking.
Uh-huh. For the other people?
Yeah, other people, yeah.
And then, you know, different kinds of agriculture have their different rhythms and different kinds of intensive work, and some is harder than others. Some is backbreaking, and others demands more coordination with the fingers and stuff. What are the peculiarities of hop, you know, farming?
Hop farming, it was very hard. Because, you know, when... I remember working, helping my father and my folks, and it was that, you know, when you first start, you know how the plants are all covered with dirt and everything? We had to get a big hole and we had to dig it all out, and then the roots are about to shoot out, and we had to cut all that out. That was really hard work.
And you were doing it as a pretty young kid.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
When did you start about? 7, 8?
I don't know. I don't remember, actually. Because I just remember growing up with the darn thing.
So you're always doing it all the time.
I was doing that and then doing the apple thing.
Now, in some Japanese families, the kids, when they were working, didn't get any of the money. Did you?
No, hardly. I guess it all goes into the
family pot.
Pot.
Uh-huh.
But I remember making $1 a day. I thought it was great money.
Now, tell me, do you still like beer and apples?
No, I can't stand apple. I don't drink, so I don't.
Okay, so neither one of those. I mean, you worked with them when you were a kid.
Yeah.
They weren't a part of your adulthood then, huh?
To this day, I won't say I can't stand apple, but I'll eat it. But I could get away with it, stay away with it, you know. Because, at that time, actually we were poor, you know, mm-hmm. barely making a living. And when my mother used to make apple pie, apple sauce, everything was apple jam, you know. And I grew up despising the darn thing after so many years, you know.
So what do you eat now? Oranges? What's your favorite fruit now?
Oranges and... peaches.
Peaches. And when you you told me that you had gone into high school at Santa Rosa High School, right?
No, I ended graduate Sebastopol.
Oh, there. Sebastopol had a high school.
Yeah,
right?
Anley High School. I
see.
Still remember the school.
And you just went there your freshman year.
I think freshman year.
And then you that must have been around 41, 42
mm-hmm.
or so. And so you went to camp.
Yeah.
And did the people from that area all go to the same camp pretty much?
Excuse me.
Most of the people went to the same camp?
No, you mean...
from your area, from the
no,
Santa Rosa.
No, you know, ironically, I don't know how it happened, but most of the, you know, the community in my camp went first. I don't know why. Several of our people got left behind. My folks and, I don't know, about half a dozen families got left behind. I don't know why.
Really? And where'd the other people go?
They went to Merced.
Merced, you know, for the assembly center.
But we got left behind. I don't know why. Uh-huh. Eventually, we caught up with everybody.
And you went to Merced, too.
Merced, yeah.
And then did most of the families from that area end up at Amache?
Amache, right.
And did they live in a particular block in Amache or several blocks? Or?
No, several blocks. Because, my family, you know, we went later with the first group. So most of the first group, you know, from my back home, they were in Camp 11E or something, and we were in 8F.
8F, okay.
Okay, that's a block that we were in. And our block was mostly mixed from, like, Yuba City, partly Sacramento, you know, it's all different.
So you were cut off from the main part of your community then.
Right.
And how many people from your family and relatives and everything were in the same area there in Amache?
Two, actually, that block that I remember. I remember the name Jack Aguilar and our family, you know. But I met, my matter of fact, one of my best buddy I met is from Belvedere, San Francisco.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Were you into sports when you were in high school and starting high
school?
No, not
as much as my brother was.
Uh-huh. And so tell me a little bit about the conditions of your, you know, being removed from the area and coming to Merced and then going on to Amache, just what your impressions were of the whole situation.
You mean Amache?
Yeah, I mean, like at first even going to Merced.
Well, you know... it was a new challenge, a new experience for us, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think I was, 16 or 7? And I didn't think too much of it. I said, oh, great, this is great, you know. Meeting new people, nothing to do. I didn't have anything to do, no homework, or anything, you know. So I thought it was pretty great, you know. And only thing at that time, you know, we're all in camp. Huh? All we're thinking about is looking for girls.
You're right, right. You're at the right age for it.
You know, that's what we're thinking about all the time.
Uh-huh.
We didn't think anything about doing chores because there wasn't any. You know.
Some people have said that the families became closer in camp, and some people said that the family went their separate ways. How was it with you?
I think, tell you the truth, I think we were mostly not that close, you know. I mean, we were family, but, you know, we're always doing things on our own, you know.
So you were hanging out with the,
you know,
the teenagers and stuff.
Teenagers all the time, you know. And then because there was nothing to do, you know, when we got home.
What did you do? What were the things that you did?
Well, you know, we played our sports, but... I wasn't very athletic, but like I say, you're always looking for
girls.
Girls,
yeah,
right.
Dances,
mm-hmm.
Stuff like. Did you get a job at any of the?
Oh yeah, yeah. I had a job in my first job. My father was head of the mess hall in
for your home, block.
Yeah, block. Yeah. And so I worked under him, washing dishes.
Okay. And you were doing that while you were still going to school?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Every evening, we would, I think I was in the evening crew, so I was washing the dishes for the evening crew, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of kibbeh that worked in the kitchen. Do you remember that?
I don't remember.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't tell who was kibbeh or not.
Oh, you couldn't tell if they were sort of more Japanese-y, they spoke a lot of Japanese, mm-hmm. and stuff? So you don't remember that? You
no,
were too
I don't
much of a kid
that.
Just looking for women, huh?
Right.
And did you eat well? as a result of working in the mess hall or not?
No, not really, because the things that they feed us wasn't... I remember having dung, you know, calf dung for meals and that.
Was there a period in camp where you started to feel that this is wrong, or that this is sort of something I want to get out of?
Not really, you know. I didn't think that. I just kept thinking that, well, you know, I, because there was, like I say, there wasn't anything to do. I didn't come to realize that this was the wrong thing. Yeah.
What do you think of the difference between the high school that you went to before camp and then the camp schools?
Oh, yeah, it was altogether different. I didn't think we were getting the education that we did in camp.
You got a better one in camp or a worse one in camp?
No, because I didn't think we were getting all the, well...
The subjects.
Subject that, okay. That we need to get.
Oh, so your camp education went down. It was inferior compared to
I
other
thought
one.
It was, yeah.
And did you have some good teachers?
Yeah, I remember one good teacher. It was an Oriental, though.
Uh-huh.
He was pretty good.
Japanese or Chinese?
Yeah.
Or Japanese.
Hiratsuka, I still remember his name. Hiratsuka, and that gentleman, he was, I thought he was pretty good.
What did he teach? What subject?
Mathematics?
I was just wondering what.
No. I think it was.
Like history or something?
No, I think it was history, not math. Uh-huh. And he was pretty good.
What was his name again?
Hiratsuka.
Okay, and did you have him early on in camp or later on in camp?
No, from day one. I mean, I went to school. I remember him.
Was he one of the few Japanese teachers that
I remember? No, there were several Japanese.
Okay,
but he was the one that I remember. Matter of fact, he's the only one I remember his name.
What did you start thinking about in terms of what you wanted to do, quote unquote, after camp? What kind of things were you starting to do at camp?
You mean after the Army?
Oh. Even before you got in the Army, did you start having some ideas, I want to do this and that, I want to be a fireman, I want to be a plumber, I want to be a doctor, a lawyer, what did you think of?
I didn't, you know, I had no inkling about things like that because I didn't have no initiative to think about it. Because I didn't think there was a future for anything. We were in camp, and, you know, I figured, well, we're getting 3 meals a day. And then...
Did you ever think about resettling somewhere, leaving camp and going somewhere else, Chicago or Denver or Salt Lake City or any place else?
No. My parents at that time, they're not a go-getter, you know.
Uh-huh.
They just followed the crowd. And so they didn't think anything about leaving camp. Well, at that time, I don't think we could leave camp. I don't remember that.
But you must have had some friends that left camp and went to other places, didn't you?
None of my friends, yeah.
No girlfriends that left?
Mm-mm.
That you still worry about?
No.
Okay, so... But you stayed in until you got drafted. And the draft first came out in January of 1944, where they opened up the draft again. And then you graduated from high school when? In 44, June of 44?
Then I went, see, and after I came home from camp, I came to work for a farm, topping sugar beets in Brighton. Named George Masanada's family?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I topped sugar beets.
This is after you got out of the military, though, and came to...
No, no.
Well, oh.
That was before, right after...
High school?
High school.
Oh, then you went out on a leave?
I went a bunch of, but there was about half a dozen of it.
But it was a short-term work leave, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay.
And then we topped sugar beets. That's the hardest work I ever did in my life.
And you worked for George Masanaga?
Yeah, it was his family.
Right.
Yeah. Top sugar bean, that was the hardest work I ever did.
Because that's who I'm going to go see after I see
you. Are you?
Yeah.
Oh!
So that's interesting.
Okay.
So you worked for his family.
Right here.
Right.
Great. Okay. Yeah. I popped sugar beets, and like I say, that was the hardest work I ever did in my life. Well, you know, I was a little...
What's tough about that, though? Because everybody always talks about popping sugar beets, and then And I know the Japanese saved the crop out here in the West.
Well, you know, the hard part was that, you know, it's October, November, when the ground freezes, you know, you're topping sugar beet with a kind of a hatchet with a little prong on the end, and you whack it, and you pick up the beets, and you gotta whack and take the leaves off.
Oh, I see.
And the ground is, you know, when the ground freezes, that thing gets to be like lead.
Oh, you mean the beet itself?
Oh. So you pick it with a, you know, it's a hatchet like this, and then there's a prong at the end. You whack it, and you pick up the beets, and then you take the, you know, hack the leaves off.
So you were actually working in Colorado, in Brighton, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I did that for one season, what they call a season, I guess.
And how long is a season? About 6 months or something?
Yeah, till about the end of November.
So you had your fill of it, though, huh?
Oh, yeah. Like I say, tell George that, well, he knows that that's the hardest work I ever did.
Did you take the job in part to get out of camp and to just, you know, have some freedom?
Yeah, what kind of, see what, you know, there's I think six or seven of us, you know, our friends, we got together and then say,
let's join up.
Join up, and you know, I guess Great Western Sugar.
Right.
They would say, well, we got for six people or seven people, and this family wants to hire you. And so we said, okay.
Did the money help your family? The money that
you
made?
No, actually, we didn't make too much.
Oh, so you just had enough to live on yourself?
Yeah, just, you know, how we were young kids, right. And then we would buy whatever we wanted, and by the time we got home, there was too much. We went back to camp, there wasn't too much.
People who went out to different places, whether it was Idaho or Montana or Colorado, different parts of Utah, did the same sort of thing, the sugar beet thing. They report having different experiences. Some of them, the towns next to them told them, stay out of the town, you can't go into the movie theater, you can't go in the restaurant. In other places, people went out into the towns, they went to the movie, they even, in one couple of cases I've talked to people, they dated Caucasian girls from the town and everything else. What was the experience of your group?
Yeah, you know, our group, actually, you know, the Masnaga family were very kind to us, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I remember, I think it was every Thursday night, the YMCA, or I think, yeah, YMCA, they would have a dance.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they would take us into town. And, you know, we meet the girls and whatever.
In Brighton?
Huh?
In Brighton.
No, in Denver.
Oh, in Denver? You'd go in there? Oh, I
so
see.
So it was a big treat for
us. So you drove out from the farm out into the town.
Yeah, well, we didn't have a car, so
yeah.
The Masnaga family would take us.
Oh, the town was loaded with a lot of Nisei girls and stuff, too, from all over the place,
weren't
they?
Right. Well, so it was an experience, you know. We met a lot of people.
Did you date interracially when you would come in, either with whites or Mexicans, blacks, or anybody else? Or it was mostly the Nisei girls?
Well, at that time, I had a girlfriend in camp.
Okay. Oh, in camp, okay.
So I was just corresponding with her, so it didn't do much.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you'd go to the dances and stuff, huh?
Yeah, I went a couple times.
And tell me what you thought of Denver at that time, because that was with they had 5,000 population, and before the war they had about 250 in that Larimer Street area. What was it like when you'd come in?
Well, you know, actually, we come to the town, and we didn't do too much. You know, we would keep to ourselves, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I remember going to a couple of stores, and they told us that, you know, we weren't welcome.
Oh, yeah, you weren't welcome in the store?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go out? Yeah, but you went outside of the Larimer Street area then.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so
I remember a place on Glenarm, you know, on 18th and Glenarm. Mm-hmm. I forgot the grocery store, but it says...
Forget it?
Forget it, you know. So I remember that. So we didn't stay too far from Larimer Street,
because
that was the main area. So
give me a kind of a verbal picture of that at that time. What was it like? Because you're talking about now after you got out of high school.
We were talking about 1944.
Yeah, okay.
So we didn't do too much mingling. As soon as the dance was over, and Bassanaga would take us to...
Back to Brighton, yeah?
Yeah, okay. They'd take us to town to do a little shopping around, and then take us right back.
Did you go to restaurants?
Well, I remember noodle shopping went a couple of times.
And how far is Brighton about from Denver? Is it within 100 miles?
Oh, no, less than 20, 30 miles.
So you weren't too far out.
Oh, no, yeah.
So he'd take you in, and then he would take you back, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was nice. And was George around then?
No, he was going to, he would come in the week. He was still going to college.
And where was he going?
He was going to CU.
Oh, so he was in Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right.
And like I said, they were a real nice family.
Yeah. And they were in the free zone, too.
I mean,
they were living in Colorado,
mm-hmm.
So yeah. So when you had that experience, did that kind of quicken your desire to get out of camp permanently or not?
Yeah, I wanted to get out.
You wanted to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were joining up for the military. Now, I know that one of the things that Amachi had was there were some people that didn't want to go
right.
to the
I remember that.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, there was a big pro and con about it.
Right.
But matter of fact, some of my friends went. They ended up going to Tule Lake, I think.
Right. Did you know them?
I knew one of them.
Did you know Noboru Taguma?
Mm-mm.
He's not the one you knew.
No.
Okay, because I've talked to him before, and he was telling me that for a while what they actually did was they were living in the town of Granada, and at night they would sneak into the camp to go visit their family.
Oh.
But they weren't allowed back in the camp. See, they were in jail for a while, they released them from jail, and then they went and settled in Granada, and they were working in Granada for the Granada fish market. And then at night, they would sneak up.
Oh.
This is some funny, sneaking into a camp. And they snuck into the camp just so they could see their parents. But who was the person that you knew? Who was the resistor, the draft resistor that you knew?
Oh, I remember his name. I can't remember his last name, but I remember his name was Noel.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember. And I hated to say it, but he left for Tule Lake, I remember. I think from Tule Lake, they sent him to Japan.
Okay, so you never probably saw him again,
mm-hmm.
did you?
No, I didn't see him.
And then, did most of the people that you know accept the draft and go?
Oh, no.
Oh, they did?
I think there were a lot of people that say they didn't want to go.
People that you knew?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they said
they didn't
no.
want to go to the draft. They said, why should we fight for this country when we're still in camp?
So you heard that debate?
Oh, yeah, I heard that debate.
Did you ever go to a meeting where people talked about it?
No, I'm sorry to say I did.
Okay.
And then I got drafted.
Okay, and so when you got drafted, when did you get your draft notice about?
I still don't remember, but we went to...
Must have been in 1945, right?
I think we went to Camp Hood. See, most of the people that got drafted went to Camp Shelby, I think.
Where did you go for your
that's
physical?
Right.
For your
Fort Logan.
Fort Logan.
Mm-hmm.
And did you go down in a bus with a bunch of guys?
Bus. Yeah.
Okay. And was most of the people that got their physical, did they pass it or not?
I don't remember how many they passed or not.
But you passed it right away.
I passed it, even though I was a blind as a bat. You know.
Did you want to go in the service then or not? How did you feel about it?
Yeah, I thought that you know. What the hell, you know, it's my duty to go fight for our country. And I thought that I was thinking like I'm an American, you
right.
know.
And you were too young to have been in JCL because
before the
war you were still a kid.
Yeah.
So that wasn't even entered into
no.
it.
No. I, matter of fact, only time I heard about JCL is when I got elected to be an officer or something. So that was, I don't remember.
After, in camp?
Camp, yeah. It was way back in camp.
Out of camp. And then, did you hear about the JCL in camp? Because in a lot of camps, the JCL people got beat up and stuff like this. At Amachi, were they a popular group or an unpopular group?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, in camp, I didn't know any.
Even who they were, right?
Know who they
okay,
were.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Well,
I didn't think, I didn't know about JCL until after the war. You know, I started living in Denver and heard about it.
Okay, so then where did you go? You said the camp that you went to for basic training was...
Yeah, I went to Camp Hood. It's Fort Hood now, but at that time they called it Camp Hood.
Okay, and
Texas.
In Texas. And where? What town is that near in Texas?
Killeen, Texas.
And did you have a lot of Nisei there?
Oh, no.
They were all at Shelby?
They were, most of them went to Shelby. As a matter of fact, our group was one of the first ones be trained as anti-tank or something, you know, and that's why I ended up in the artillery, 522 field artillery.
Did you get into the service before the war ended?
Oh, yeah.
You did?
I fought a little bit I just saw the tail end. The most thing I remember is that I remember 522, you know, that's a that we were in, we liberated. We don't get credit
right.
for it, but we liberated the town.
Oh, so you were involved in that?
Uh-huh.
Wow. And so you were in the 442nd then?
Yeah, the division, the 442nd.
Yeah, division. Okay, so, wow. Did you go yourself?
Yeah, I remember going to the
camp. Well, tell me a little bit about that experience.
And
how long had you been in the military by the time that came about?
That was towards the end of the war, you
right.
know.
And you had been in for about a half a year or something?
Yeah, and then we ended up in Australia, and the war ended. I think we were going towards Germany, and then we liberated. Well, I believe that we
right.
were one of the first ones that liberated the Kahl. And I remember the first thing, I remember going to the camp, you know, the smell, but the thing I remember most is that, hey, they're not greeting us, you know. They're saying, oh, we're liberated.
They thought you were Japanese.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I remember that.
Did you then have some contact with them for a few days? Did you stay around Dachau for...
No, we, ironically, we were there, I think, one day, and then the division says we had to get out.
So you moved out.
We moved out right away.
And did you speak to, did anybody have English that they could speak to you or not?
We were just in and out. So
okay. So you didn't have a conversation with them. You saw them, though.
Oh, yeah.
So you saw the skinny sort of wretches that they had.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Okay. If somebody asks you the difference between a Japanese American camp and one for Jews in Europe, you know the difference.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember that. You know, the Jewish people there in Dachau, you know, you could tell they were half starved and, you know, they're filthy. But the thing I remember most is that, you know, they didn't greet us.
Right.
Like normally.
You're expecting to get
somebody. Yeah, they said, oh, God, I thought they would be happy to be liberated, you know. And we come in there and they said, you know, they didn't greet us like normal people.
And then where'd you finish up the war? Where did you muster out of the military? Where was that?
Oh, in Chicago.
Oh, and so you saw Chicago then in what year, 46, would that have been?
46.
And there was still a lot of Nikkei there.
Chicago was quite a bit.
And did you live there for a while?
No. His name was Miyamoto. Anyway, he lived in Chicago. I stayed in his house for one night, and then I came to Denver.
So you weren't in Chicago very long.
Oh, no,
you were
about
there as long as you were in Dachau, right?
Oh, yeah, right.
Did you like Chicago, or are you from that little...
Oh, no, it was... If I remember correctly, I got discharged in August, and oh, boy, was it hot and humid.
So you were ready to clear out of there.
Oh, yeah.
And then what was your contact in Colorado that you could come to Denver? Who did you know?
Oh, well, actually, it's my folks. My folks, especially my mother, he didn't want to leave Colorado because in California, we had nothing. Because, you know, we're all, We didn't have our home or anything, and all our property we had to sell.
Right.
You know, I remember selling a refrigerator for $15. I remember at a Safeway salesman bought it for $15 because we can't take it with us. I remember that.
So you really had nothing to go back
to. We had nothing to go back to.
Yeah.
So my folks knew somebody in Boulder.
Uh-huh.
They already relocated. And so he was in Camp Amaki. He said, so why not come to Denver? And so my folks were working for University of Colorado for house cleaning, you know, janitorial service.
Oh, really? At Boulder?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no kidding. Is that where you went to after the war?
Yeah.
So you went up to Boulder?
Because my folks were living in Boulder.
Oh, so that was home for you.
That was home.
Yeah.
And my, matter of fact, my youngest brother, George, graduated from Boulder High School.
Really? Mm-hmm. And I know the one real presence of Japanese in Boulder during the war was at the Navy. They had the intelligence school, the
mm-hmm.
Naval Intelligence
yeah.
in Boulder. And I know they had trouble, too, even those guys. In this intelligence, they had trouble getting housing in Boulder. What was it like after the war? Did you feel that they were welcoming and open, or did you feel some prejudice?
No. All prejudice.
Oh,
yeah.
You did in
we
Boulder. Okay. And how did it you know sort of materialize in the difficult time getting housing or just?
Well, I don't remember that because see my folks, we had a house on not a house but apartment. In the back of a store,
uh-huh.
It was a real small, you know.
Uh-huh.
But you know, we had three kids, and I remember that. And housing was terrible.
And so, what did you do? How long did you stick around with your folks?
No, I worked there for a long time, and then.
A long time, like years or months?
Oh no, we stayed in Boulder for about 2 years.
Oh, so you got to know Boulder then.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then what kind of work did you do there?
Well, my folks knew somebody from Santa Rosa back home.
Uh-huh.
He had a restaurant.
In Boulder?
In Boulder.
Japanese restaurant?
No. It was called Anchorage,
uh-huh.
And it was kind of a beer joint, you know.
Okay.
Side restaurant, and uh-huh. Mostly he had a dance floor and everything. I was working for him.
Uh-huh. And what'd you do? What was your job?
Waiting on tables.
Oh, you, no kidding. Had you done any of that in the service or
nope.
At camp?
Nope.
No?
First time. First experience.
So when you were at camp, you were just sort of helping out on the mess, but you weren't one of the waiters ever.
Oh, you mean camp?
Yeah.
In camp, I was a dishwasher.
But you were a pearl diver.
Yeah, right.
Okay, pearl. But you hadn't done any of that waiting or
helping out.
So this was a new job for
new
you.
New job.
And what did you do in the service? What was your job before you, just when you were?
Well, you know, at first, we were in the 522 and, you know, artillery department.
Uh-huh.
That's where I got sent to one of those, they called the, oh, I forgot the guns.
Artillery?
Yeah, artillery.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I could barely lift the, you know how small I am.
Right.
And I was, you know, 18-year-old, 19-year-old kid. I could barely lift a shell, I think it's 101 millimeter. So I guess one of the sergeants says, oh God, he could hardly lift it up. So they transferred me to the machine gun section, outpost, you know, where they protect the artillery. And I couldn't lift those damn ammo.
It's too small for that, huh?
I didn't have the strength.
And when you were working at the restaurant in Boulder later on, was it strictly as a waiter, or did you help out on the cooking and bartending and everything?
Strictly waiter.
Uh-huh. And then did you save anything or not?
No, because you know most of the they catered to mostly high school. I mean, college kids. You know. You don't tip very well.
Okay, so you weren't making much.
I wasn't making much.
So how'd you finally spring out of there and get something better?
Well, I don't know if it's better, but another friend that lived in Boulder was doing farm work it's north of Denver right now. And so he said, you want to go into a partnership and run a farm. So I worked for him for
What kind of farming?
Celery.
Oh, celery.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. And I know there was a lot of differences between the way they farmed in Colorado and the way they farmed in California, but did you notice that?
Well, at that time I didn't remember, but matter of fact, most of our plant came from California, I remember. You know, the little seedling,
uh-huh.
And then we had to put it in the ground. And that was, I heard that was, at that time I didn't know, but I heard that was illegal to ship plants into Colorado.
Oh, but they did anyway.
We did anyway.
One of the differences that I read about was that in California, the farms were just bigger.
Mm-hmm.
In Colorado, there were smaller sort of farms. And in fact, some of the Colorado farmers got upset when the California farmers came in because they were driving up the land prices so much because they were offering more money and things like this. Was that still happening after the war or not?
I don't remember that, actually. But we were growing celery, and then we lost our tail.
Oh, you did?
Because of the hail. Colorado is known for a lot of hail at a certain time, and our area got hailed out and just wiped out our whole crop.
Yeah, celery was a big crop in Southern California,
mm-hmm.
around Venice. But it must have been too, the short growing season in Colorado compared to California.
Yeah, it's short. And as a matter of fact, his name was Nomura. I can't remember. They call it Nopo. Anyway, he grew up in Southern California, so he knew the celery business. So that's the reason he told me, well, you want to go half and half and do the celery business. I said, okay. We're going great guns until we hit
the hail.
Yeah.
And did you get out of farming then? Or
I did. After that.
What'd you do?
Then after that, I went to work for one family that was a farmer, they call it, and then I helped him grow, you know, carrots and radish, you know, small farmer. And then, matter of fact, his family is one of the biggest greenhouse growers in Barton now.
But you were still doing the agriculture work, right?
Oh, yeah. And until I got out, I moved to Denver. I moved to Denver in, I forgot what year it was.
50s?
Yeah, it was 50s. Then I went to work for George W. Pryor, which is a Western wear manufacturing. I worked there for about 4 or 5 years.
That was your first job outside?
First job outside in Denver.
Farming. And then, were you married by then or not?
No. I didn't get married until 1952.
Could you have afforded to get married at that
point? Oh, no, I couldn't.
Okay. So there must have been a lot of young guys like you that were in the same position, came out of the service, and were looking around for
At that time, you know, being Japanese, you know, it was hard to get a good, decent job that you would like to go. So, you know, you had to make a living. So, at first I was farming for about 3-4 years, and then I went to work for this Western outfit. I worked there for quite a while, and I forgot what I did after that.
And what did you still used to go into Denver and go to dances and stuff like
that? Oh, no, I didn't do anything of that.
You didn't?
Any of that.
Just concentrated on work pretty
Working,
much?
Working, yeah.
Uh-huh. And were you starting to save money by then?
Well, a little bit, and then I went to school at night to learn bookkeeping.
Where'd you go?
Central College. It was a
community college?
Community college.
Uh-huh. And was that in Denver?
That was in Denver.
Uh-huh. So you were in Denver quite a bit at that
mm-hmm.
point.
Oh, ever since then. I was thinking of, at that time when I graduated from Army, 1946, I told my folks I'm going to go to California to see what, you know,
what's
go
out
back
there.
Home.
Right.
And then there wasn't anything.
You went back?
I went
back. Did you go to Santa Rosa area?
I went to Santa Rosa. Stayed there for 2 weeks. I knew, you know, friends.
This is it.
So I went back to the. I told my folks that there's no use going back to Denver because there's nothing for us.
Okay, so yeah, it's a nice dream to go home, but if there's nothing at home.
Yeah.
So you came back, and was Denver starting to feel more like home for you?
Oh, no, it took quite a while.
How long? 20 years? 10
yeah,
years?
It took, as a matter of fact, I still remember we tried to buy an rent an apartment, and you know, it says, oh, we just rented it. You know, hear that all the time. You know, being Japanese, you know, it was hard to get. So we stuck around this area here.
Well, you know, I heard that a lot of the Denver Nihonjin were pretty prejudiced against the California Nihonjin.
Yeah, they were.
So how did that surface? How did you feel that?
Well, at that time, I thought, well, what the heck, you know, you had to live with it.
But did you? Was it just the way they treated you, or they didn't like you dating their daughters, or how?
No, I did. I remember my there was prejudice against local. You know, you're going to the restaurant. You know, you don't get served pretty well. But
even by the Japanese.
Japanese at that time.
And then did you notice the change from the time when you had been going in there when you were working for the Matsunagas and you used to go into Denver, you know, when you were out of camp topping beets and sugar beets and stuff? That was when the big population was in Denver. And then by this time you're talking about, a lot of them had gone back to Oregon, Washington, California. They weren't there. So did you notice that the town looked different, or the Larimer area looked different?
Well, Larimer, I remember, started gradually changing, you know, because of people leaving for California.
And what kind of changes did you experience? What when you say it was changing, in what way? What ways? Was it less exciting to be in there, or less busy?
No, it was less busy, I guess, you know, because the businesses started to close down.
Okay, so there weren't as many places open, restaurants, pool halls and stuff.
If you notice in this book, you'll notice how many Japanese businesses there
lots
were.
Lots of them. 46.
46,
sure.
A lot.
But that's starting to be the turning point. 46 people are
starting.
That's what's
changing.
So this catches it right at the height, really. And was there employment possibilities in the J-Town area of Denver or not?
Well, I don't remember about employment, because I was working for this Western outfit, you know.
Where was that in Denver?
It was on Lawrence, 17th and Lawrence.
So that was pretty close.
Close, yeah.
Okay.
Walking distance. I still feel prejudiced, you know. Even though I lived here for, you know, I'm 76 years old, and I still feel prejudiced when I go to certain places.
From other Japanese?
Oh, no.
Okay, when did you start being accepted by the other Japanese, the ones that were from Denver from long ago?
Well, I think because, you know, I got married in 1952.
To a local?
No, she's from Sacramento.
Okay, so she's another Californian that came out.
Anyway, that's when my father-in-law started. I worked for my father-in-law. And then I started working. Then, you know, I started working at the store. And then, you know, I didn't feel that, you know, the
difference. Yeah, so you started to feel more like
Colorado
Japanese American, right? Okay, and then did you start getting involved in the community? Did you start having friendships here and join organizations and churches?
I was involved with the Simpson Methodist Church, but at that time it was called California Street. But I was a bazaar chairman for 2 years.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. So I got involved in the church and met a lot of friends.
Is that the church where Sumi went? She was a Methodist too.
Probably California.
Okay. Uh-huh.
In California, and then it turned to Simpson Methodist Church. And
where's that located exactly? Where was it located?
I think it was around 24th in California.
Okay, and how far is that from the Larimer Street area?
Well, actually, it's not that far.
Like just five walking distance?
You know, not walking distance, but you can walk if you want to. But
it's a long walk.
Yeah, it's a long walk.
Yeah, okay. And then were there a lot of
27th.
Was it a Japanese congregation?
Right.
Okay, and what about the minister there?
Yeah, mostly all Japanese.
Nisei, or were they from Japan?
Oh, no, they were Nisei.
Okay, Nisei. Okay, younger Nisei? Or?
As a matter of fact, when I was involved in church, I got matter of fact, yeah, we used to go fishing together. Reverend Hagia, I don't know if you remember him or not.
No.
Paul Hagia, he passed away.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know who you mean. Okay, yeah.
Paul Hagia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was very close. I used to go fishing with him.
Wow.
Things like that. So I got involved in the church quite a bit.
Were you a Christian or a Buddhist when you lived in California?
I was a Buddhist.
Uh-huh. So you made
I made a transition when I was in the Army.
Oh, in the Army.
Army, and then, because, you know, there was no Buddhist services.
Oh, I see. So then you started going to church.
Yeah.
Okay. And was that much of a difference for you or not?
No, I just accepted it and became a Methodist. Matter of fact, I'm baptized a Methodist. My whole family is a Methodist.
Uh-huh. Methodist is a big church here, I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
What was your career development like? What else did you do after you were working in there in the manufacturing area?
After that, I graduated, my accountant.
Right.
And then
you were married then when you graduated?
No.
Oh, you still weren't married?
No, okay. I wasn't. And then I went to work for Rossi's Produce as an accountant for a couple of years, and then I got married. 1952.
That was an Italian outfit, Rossi's, right?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Were they good boss?
Oh, yeah, it was very good. Yeah. It treated me,
straight up, huh?
Straight up.
Good. And you got married in 52, you said? And then, how did you meet your wife?
Well, actually, I was dating somebody else.
Uh-huh. Well, that happened.
Yeah. And then, we would go to the, matter of fact, the girl that I was dating had this, on the corner, he had the Henry Jewelry Store. It was a big jewelry store. And we would go to, it was two stores down, Pacific Mercantile, that was my father.
Uh-huh.
We used to go in there, and I got to know my wife. But still, I was still dating Mary, But then eventually we broke up, and then I started dating Susie, and that's my wife. And then we got married in 52.
And tell me what Pacific Mercantile means to the Japanese American community in Denver as a store, as an institution.
Well, right now it's the only one, but at that time with my father-in-law, he was very well known in the community.
Uh-huh.
He did a lot for the community. Matter of fact, he was a leader, in certain things. That was my father-in-law.
So you married into an important family.
Oh, yeah.
Was that intimidating for you?
No, not really.
Okay.
But I'm thankful that I got involved with my father-in-law because he realized that he did a lot for the community. And although I don't do too much, but I was a JCL officer at that time. But he was a very important man in the community.
Yeah, he was an Nisei, of course. Mm-hmm. And was he like 25 years older than you or so? Or?
Oh, no, he was, I guess maybe 25, or 30 years.
But he was in his prime still then, huh?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
After the war, too, right?
Yeah. He was well, very known and very well liked,
Was he a younger Issei?
No, he was
he was a regular age
Issei? He was the Issei.
Okay.
A naturalized citizen.
But he became naturalized after the war.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but he wasn't younger than most of the Issei. He was about the same age as them.
Yeah, because.
So he would have been like 55 after camp was over or something.
Oh
like
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but then he lived for much longer, didn't he?
Oh yeah, 101.
So and then did he stay in business for a long time?
Still running.
But did he stay with the business while he died?
Right.
Still involved in it.
Hmm.
Really?
At the time when he was, when he retired, he sold the, not sold it, but he gave the business to his son. He had two sons. And my wife, actually, three ways.
Uh-huh.
And actually, one broke away. And then my son, my brother-in-law, Sam, which was running the store, he died last year. So My wife inherited everything.
So is that, do you run the store now?
Oh, no, since I had the stroke, I couldn't run.
But do you have a manager or something?
No, my son and daughter run the store.
Oh, okay, and how's it doing as a store right now?
They're holding their own.
How has it changed as a store from the time when you first knew about it till now? I mean, in terms of what they carry and their clientele, their location even. Are they in the same place?
No, they were on Lambert when the store opened.
Uh-huh.
Now we're on the opposite of Lawrence Street.
And how long
because
did it take to get over to Lawrence Street?
No, because of the urban renewal.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Buddhist Church is right there on Lawrence,
uh-huh.
Right? Well, when the urban renewal came, the church built the square.
Uh-huh.
And Granada Fish Market, at that time, were on Lawrence Street. And because of the development, they had to move Granada to Larimer, and they built that store first, and then they built Pacific on Lawrence. So that's how we are, 1972.
Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
And then how has the store changed in terms of its size, the number of employees, what they sell?
Oh, God. At that time, when we were on Larimer Street, I used to help at the store. It used to be a little bigger than this house.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't very big. But now it's humongous. You know, it's probably the biggest Oriental between Chicago and the West Coast.
And does it sell mostly Asian stuff in there?
Mostly, 99%
okay,
Asian
so
stuff.
Okay, so food stuffs, or what kinds of things does it sell in there?
Grocery, art goods,
uh-huh.
And
so
vegetables.
Diversified.
Mm-hmm.
Was it diversified from the beginning?
Oh, very beginning.
Okay, it's just got more of everything now.
And then we, since my son took over, everything got to be on computer.
Oh, so but it's still a community business, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? So, I mean, it's still a recognizable place that people
think
know
if
about.
The original people that, you know, were here for a long time, you ask them about Pacific, they would know where the store is.
Are there any other comparable businesses that have had that longevity that Pacific has, where they've lasted long like that, that you can trace way back to the resettlement area up until?
The only one other than that, us, would be Granada Fish Market.
Is that still in existence?
No.
Oh, okay.
They folded up about 15 years ago.
Okay.
Because
so
he died. See, the owner. That's the one that started it.
Right.
Granada.
And so, but that's no longer.
That's no longer.
Okay, but then this is out distance then.
The only one that just as long, it would be Akebono Restaurant.
Uh-huh.
Originally, it was called Fred's Pool.
Uh-huh.
And then he turned it into a restaurant. And he was here when I came to Denver.
What are the places that you remember of the restaurants or the stores from the old days when you start thinking back about then? What were places that were important? Where you would think, well, this is a place where, you know, like they had the Yamato Employment Office and stuff
mm-hmm.
like this.
Yeah.
What places can you think of that you think back as sort of pillars of the community?
Me now?
No, back then, that were places that you thought of were, you know, these like the big stores. Like they may be gone now, but they were big in their day.
I remember Machu Grill.
Okay, yeah. What? Tell me about Machu Grill, because I read about that. I see ads for
mm-hmm.
it and stuff. What kind of place was that?
That was a regular restaurant.
Did it serve Asian stuff as well as?
No, just Asian.
Just
Asian.
It was Japanese stuff,
mm-hmm.
too, not Chinese as well. Too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it was just Japanese food.
Mm-hmm.
And did it do a good business?
Well, I think it was doing very good business. Then he opened up the big restaurant in L.A., I remember.
Okay, so he had two places then, huh? I mean, he had the place here, and then he went back to the coast?
No, he closed that side.
And when would that have been that he closed it, in the 50s?
Well, it must have been the 60s.
60. You know the name of the place he opened in Los Angeles? I'm interested in that.
Yamato.
Oh, really? That was it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's what he opened up in.
Yeah, he had a big, it was a pretty big restaurant.
Yeah, yes, it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
In Japan. I'm not Japan.
In J-Town, little
mm-hmm.
Tokyo.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So he had this place here, and then he moved there, Machu
mm-hmm.
Grill. What was his name?
Furuta.
Furuta, huh?
I don't remember his first name.
But that was the Furuta family? other big places of any sort, any kind
well,
of...
Well, I remember the jewelry store was doing a very good job, called Joel.
And who owned that?
Mr. Joel.
And how'd you spell that last name?
J-O-R-O.
Oh, Joel Rowe. Okay.
Joel Rowe, yeah.
Okay, I see, okay.
Yeah.
And
I remember, other than that, it would be the matter of fact, I worked there for a while, sometimes part-time, Texaco Station, where the Buddhist church is now.
And did that stay for a long time?
They stayed there for a long time.
And were they run by evacuees or locals?
No, he was from Sacramento, matter of fact.
Were most of the businesses in the Larimer Street area run by evacuees?
Yeah.
Okay, so when
they, I know.
Okay, they started the businesses
mm-hmm.
then when they came in.
Mm-hmm.
And were most of the locals farmers in the outlying areas?
Right.
Okay, so that there was that division too. Now, of the ones from California, would there be more Buddhists or Christians, do you think?
I think there's more Buddhists.
From out, and then more Christians here
mm-hmm.
in this area? So there were some differences between
oh,
the communities.
Yeah.
What other differences were there that you can think of, that other than we've mentioned?
Well, I remember the farmers and the city folks didn't get along very well.
They didn't get along that well.
No. Uh-uh.
Did they think that the city folk were too...
Because, see, the city folks are originally from California.
California.
Yeah.
And what did they think about Californians? That they were too slick or what?
Well, that's a good term, you know. I remember when I was farming, like the early time I was farming, you know, even then, we were resented by the local farmers, you know.
Did the JCL change that situation a little bit? Were there people from both the Californians and the locals get involved in the JCL, or was it mostly locals or mostly Californians?
No, I think it was mostly Californians.
Mostly Californians. Okay, and do you think that the locals like the JCL or not?
I remember, you know, lately, you know, there's a lot of JCL group in Brighton,
right.
And there are a lot of farmers, you know, so I think kind of got close to together, you know.
And what towns around here did you used to visit, aside from Denver? Did you ever go to where there are visit other Japanese in, like, Fort Lupton or Greeley, or did you go to any of these other communities?
Well, you know, we used to go to Fort Lupton, right? Well, reason for that is my father-in-law, when you know, we had that store on Larimer Street,
uh-huh.
we used to deliver, you know, the tofu and groceries to Brighton and Fort Lupton. And I used to drive for him.
Uh-huh.
So I know that area pretty well.
So you know that real well.
Mm-hmm. And matter of fact, I got to know the farmers real well, you know.
Well, you probably felt comfortable with them a little
oh,
bit,
yeah.
because you farmed yourself at
yeah.
different times.
So
you worked both.
We got along pretty good.
Good. And did you work in the store for years?
Oh, yeah. Since, when my brother-in-law, Sam and Robert, they were going to college then at CU, and so I was kind of helping my father run the store.
Were you the accountant for the store?
Oh, no.
Oh, who was?
They had a bookkeeper.
Did you help that at
no.
all or not? Oh, so your accountant?
Oh, no, I think I was helping them count the money and all that stuff, but as far as keeping the records and everything, that was
a big operation?
A big operation.
And what did you do? Mostly work in the store?
I worked in the store.
Okay, so you worked in that store for years.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to know the community.
Oh, yeah.
The customers.
Well, yeah, I know the customers pretty well.
Yeah.
Most of them, a lot of them.
So, I mean, that was one of the ways you knew people.
Yeah.
Through that.
Through the
okay.
store.
And did the store extend credit to people at all or not?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so there was a little bit business, but there was also mm-hmm. the sense of community, too, huh?
Yeah, and then, matter of fact, 1970-something, anyway, I broke away from the store and ran my own bean sprout company, you know. And then because of my health, I quit that, and then I went back to the store.
It was higher pressure on the store than it was out
yeah.
by yourself?
And then, matter of fact, I worked the store till last year until I had my stroke.
And tell me about your residential situation, how you ended up out here, and what houses. I mean, I know you said there are a lot of them, so I don't expect you to remember all of them. But the reason I'm interested in it is, and I was just talking to Sumi about this too, about where they first lived and where they later lived. And at first, they were facing these restrictive covenants where Japanese couldn't buy houses, and then areas opened up. Tell me when you moved, and if your movements paralleled the movements of the rest of the community.
Well, like I said, when I first came to Denver, I lived on 2015 Laramie. Yeah,
uh-huh.
I remember that. And then
great, you still remember the address?
Yeah, I still remember that address. And then we lived there for about several years, and then we moved to the apartment on Arapahoe, 18th and something Arapahoe.
That's just a couple of blocks away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was owned by a Japanese. And then we moved to...
You're saying we. Now, is this with your wife?
A family. No. Okay. We weren't married yet.
Oh, you still... This was before 452 then?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And then we moved to, like I said, and then we moved to 715th, 27th Street. You know, that close to church.
Uh-huh.
We lived there for quite a while until I got married. And then when we got married, we were looking for an apartment. It took, you won't believe how long it took to get an apartment. Finally, we found an apartment on Clarkson Street, 1800 block. Because, see, we couldn't get an apartment because being Oriental, it was still a lot of purchases.
So it's where you were looking, too. You were looking in a nicer neighborhood, right?
Try to, get better.
Right.
But we ended up in a basement apartment.
Where?
On 18th and Clarkson.
Oh, you got into that area, but it's not a house.
No.
Into a basement.
Apartment.
Okay.
Yeah. We lived there for quite a while. And then, I wasn't making that much money. So finally, my in-law, says, well, why don't you, we have a vacant, they had a vacancy in their house on Humboldt, 27-something Humboldt. So we stayed with my in-law until, quite a while on Humboldt Street. And then my father-in-law, and they bought a house on Kearney Street.
It was on Kearney,
a real good house, and we lived there for a while, and then gradually we bought our own house.
What year would that have been about when you got your house?
The house would say 69, so it must have been about 65.
So it took you from 1946 to 65 before you were buying a house, right?
That was the first house we bought.
Okay.
1960.
No problem buying that one.
No.
Right? Okay.
Because, see, at that time, it was a real good area,
Right.
But it gradually turned to all colored.
Okay. Were there Japanese there when you moved there?
Oh, yeah, across the street there was Japanese.
Okay.
Matter of fact, the whole area was quite a few Japanese.
Okay, so that was an area where Japanese moved out of the central area
and going into
that.
And
then where did you go from there?
From there, here.
Oh, right here. And what about here? Are there any other Japanese families in this area?
No.
No?
Well, I know the closest one is where you're going to go next.
Okay.
Masanagas.
Okay.
On Great. They live on 300-something Great, I think.
Okay, so it's really just a mixed community, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just by chance.
Well, actually, this community is mostly Jewish.
Oh, really? And was it by the time you moved in here?
Yeah.
And when was that you moved in?
We moved in 69.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, all my kids' good friends to this day are Jews.
Yeah, and were the Jewish people pretty good to Japanese?
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. They didn't bother us. And, yeah, they were pretty good.
Yeah. Sometimes I've noticed that in some of the people that there's some anti-Jewish feelings even among Japanese and stuff. So I even among people who were liberals, liberals and stuff like this. So I guess that follows people in every community a little bit.
Yeah, so.
But this is now still largely Jewish population.
Uh-huh.
With you, in fact, I think the 244 house, when I went on the other end down that day, I think the person was Jewish that I was talking to.
I don't think it's that strong, but most 1969, this is almost all Jewish community.
And no blacks here.
Hardly. There was one family about 2 blocks from me.
What about Hispanics?
Hispanic is one I can always count there.
Okay, so it's predominantly Jewish with a sprinkling of Asians, like maybe Japanese or Chinese or so or something, and then Hispanic, and then a black. And that's pretty much the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then what about any other non-Jewish whites that live in this area?
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, two across the street is
Christian.
Christian. I think they're Christian.
Okay, so yeah, so this is really and what's left of any kind of concentrated Japanese population in Denver? Nothing?
There isn't.
Okay.
You know, the only concentration is our store in the Buddhist church.
So if somebody was to ask you, I know there's no official date for this, but if you were to give it a date and you said, this was about the year that J-Town died, when did Japanese Denver, as a geographic place, as a place where there were businesses and houses, when do you say it reached the end of the line? And it became something different after that.
I would say in the early 1970s.
Early 1970s.
Maybe 1970s. 72, we moved to the new store.
On that note, I would like to thank you very much. I think we've reached the end of the line with our interview.
Oh,
it's been great.
You could take this if you want to.
Sure, I do. Definitely.
See?
You bet.
This has...